VentureCast.
Hold on to your butts.
We are changing the course of history as we see it. That is what Western demands.
Now this affects Iris. Iris, where are you?
What you feel only matters to you.
I do not entertain hypotheticals. The world as it is vexing enough.
Iris, I have a tip for you.
Don't take drugs!
Or whatever movies with Wesley and Iris.
What up? And welcome to Or Whatever Movies. I'm your co-host, Iris, and I'm here with my older brother. Today we're talking a movie from 2024, Dune Part 2.
Okay, what's better? Desert Avatar 2, The Waste of Water? Or Kangaroo Mouse 2, Frictions with the Fremens? Or Jabba the Harkonnen? Albino Elvis and the Clicker Guards?
Albino Elvis. You said Austin Butler was having a tough time kicking the accent. So this was his clear way out of the Elvis character.
Yeah. You know why? Because he just adopted another real person's voice.
Whose?
Kelly Ray took one look at that dude on planet Albino or whatever and was like, is that a Skarsgård? And I was like, no. And then I waited until Stellan appeared on screen. I was like, but that's a Skarsgård. So he legitimately researched Stellan Skarsgård's old movies for his younger version voice and then talks just like him.
May your blade chip and shatter.
I can't keep track of them all. Bill and Stellan are related?
Yeah. Not to be confused with the Northman Skarsgård, Alexander.
This is what I'm saying. It's confusing.
Well, it's Bootstrap Bill, it's Pennywise, and the Northman.
But then don't forget Sarsgaards without the K.
There's only one of them.
Yeah, but still.
Unless you count Maggie Sarsgaard.
I think she goes by Gyllenhaal.
Also, this is all racist.
In a, like, Nordic kind of way, yeah.
Yep. So you're going to have to captain this ship, man, because Dune, not my tune. You were super excited.
Yes, I was excited. In fact, I was so excited that we did a leap year day screening of Dune Part 1 and then saw Dune Part 2 the next day. It was dope.
So I simply refuse to read this book or to revisit Part 1 in preparation for this discussion. I do know that Timothée Chalamet's marriage to a Black Widow was politically motivated and that he assures Johnny repeatedly in the book that it is to be presented as a marriage, but, you know, it's a political strategy and nothing will happen. There's no intimacy between them or whatever. But that's not stated in the movie, and that's why she storms out and is all mad. But it's definitely a thing. I thought that it was to placate the old dude, to be like a last jab at Christopher Walken. Like, yeah. And by the way, when I kill you, I'm going to take care of your daughter, if you know what I mean. And to like poke him one more time before he dies.
I think it was supposed to be a little concession. And to be clear, Florence Pugh is not Black Widow. She is Black Widow's sister.
She is definitely the Black Widow.
Oh, she is?
Now she is. Everybody dies.
Is Scarlett Johansson Black Widow's sister?
Dead.
Oh, so if your sister dies and you assume your sister's role is Black Widow?
Right. All the little sisters take over the main roles. Like when I die, you'll be the head of Or Whatever Movies. When Chadwick Boseman dies, Shuri's Black Panther.
Right. That is so misogynistic.
So Dune 2, at least.
No, I have a question for you. I need to understand your measure of dorkness in order to approach this conversation, this discussion appropriately. All right?
Okay.
So, how many names does Timothée Chalamet's character have?
Well, let's see. His given name, supposedly, is Paul Atreides of the House Atreides. I guess technically he is also a Paul Harkonnen. He then goes, his chosen name is Desert Rat, a.k.a. Paul Moardib. But that's his war name. He also has some other name. Mahdi, I think, is what they call him, because like the Messiah. And then Big Cutie or whatever. That's my nickname for him. What else? What does he got?
There's three more.
What?
Yep.
Nope. I'm not playing this game. What do you got? I got nothing.
They choose Usul.
Usul, yeah. Okay, got it.
Which means?
Usul means the dude. Chosen
the
one.
Dude. Then my favorite. Lisan Al-Ghaib.
Yep, that one.
And then last, but certainly not least, are you ready?
Yes.
The Kwisatz Haderach.
Right, the knick-knack paddywhack. So my question for you is, who are the nerds who love Dune? Is it dweebs or is it deebs?
Dune weebs?
Yeah,
Dune
weebs? But I don't know, but weeb doesn't have a direct connotation with anything Japanese. So is dweeb okay? Or should we just go with deeb?
Well, deeb is what? A dune weeb?
Yeah.
No, I think we go with dweebs. I'm not a dweeb, but when I told Gabe Dupin that I wouldn't go to prom with him unless he saw Titanic, I think he also made me see Dune, the original Dune.
Wait, you were like, I'm not going to go to prom with you unless you watch Titanic, which he didn't want to do. And then he made you watch a movie in turn?
I think so. He didn't want to watch Titanic because he was convinced that there was some subliminal message in the film and that one day James Cameron would call on all of us, like the Terminators, would like activate the subliminal message, and then we would all do his bidding.
That is the dweebiest thing I've ever heard.
And so he was saving himself, but I said, no prom date of mine will be Titanic-less. And so he saw Titanic, and then, so I think I first watched the first Dune with the dude from Twin Peaks.
Can that be the poster quote?
What?
No prom date of mine will be Titanic-less.
Yes.
Oh, man. Speaking of James Cameron and Terminator 2, I felt so bad for Drax, for Dave Bautista. He was like the lumbering T-800 and all messed up and yelling and stuff and all brute force. And then Stellan Skarsgård was like, nah, send in the sleek T-1000 model. Get the job done. You know what I mean? I felt bad for Big Brother.
I kind of felt bad for him, too. Like, someone knocked him down, and we got, like, a really clear shot of his, like, brain scalp.
Yeah.
Head. And I was like, aww.
He's my brain head. He's my brain head brother. I feel
for him.
You
have brain head scalp?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
It's why I fight baldness so much. Like, I simply can't. It's gross, man.
You have so much hair, though. How do you know?
Because I can feel it. I don't have a clean bald head.
You know, you can wear hats and stuff, right?
I know, and I will, I guess, one day. So, a few years ago, and by a few, I mean like 5 years ago, Hamilton was a big thing, right? Hamilton came to the Pantages here in LA, and everyone was like, oh my God, Hamilton! And so, in turn, I was like, oh my God, Hamilton! And I paid a fortune for a few tickets. And I came out of there, and everyone was like, wow! And I was like, okay. And then someone said to me, oh, well, you should have known the songs. You should have listened to the soundtrack and you should have had it all memorized or whatever, and then you can sing along, and then
it's true.
Then it's much more enjoyable. That's not how that works. Is that how theater is supposed to work?
That's what real musical theater aficionados
do. Yeah. So is that what real dweebs do? Do you have to have read Dune for it all to make sense, for it all to be cohesive? And otherwise, it's not as enjoyable a movie. Like, I'm not prepared for that. In order to speak, is this a good movie or a bad movie? It has to stand on its own merits and present to me as entertainment that I can be like, okay, well, that was great in its presentation on its own. Because, oh, he's a visionary filmmaker and it looks amazing and all that good stuff. If it doesn't make sense, if you're confused, if you have to watch it multiple times, even the first one that you love.
Well, nobody reads. Nobody read Game of Thrones. R.R. Martin's. Is it J.R.R. Martin?
No.
Why do they all have J's?
George R.R. Martin.
Okay. Nobody read George R.R. Martin's Game of Thrones series. Nobody revisited J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy.
And you didn't read Frank R.R. Herbert's Dune?
No, nobody reads. It has to stand on its own. But it does have to stand up to the scrutiny of the dweebs, because if it doesn't and you disappoint them, then they're going to relentlessly trash your film.
Game of Thrones is different, though. It all changes. People in the world of Game of Thrones, the books, are still alive, whereas people in the show are dead, and vice versa.
Well, yeah, because the show outpaced George R.R. Martin and really did take on a life of its own. So what if that just, you know, more fodder for Game of Thrones fans? But my question is, were you confused?
Yes, I was definitely confused. But so power over spice is power overall in the Iraqian. That was the Iraqian quote. And so the rebels are all dooning around out there in the desert. And we picked up from part one and there was just burying Jamis. Like, he died 2 years ago. Who was he? James Brown? The whole point is water and spice are the two most precious resources on this planet. Then they send out drones over Dune, right? Why don't they just drone over Dune all the time? Why are they wandering around in the desert? Why did they send in ground soldiers for the spice harvester? Why don't you do that laser thing? If it only takes 3 seconds before they can lock onto you, just me, bam, and take it down, which they did later on another thingy and just killed it.
Okay, wow. Okay, first of all, Jamis didn't die 2 years ago. The story is continuous. Jamis just died.
See, I don't think so.
We've been delivered 2 years. He's still in the package. They're delivering him to the Well of Souls or whatever that's called. And he just died. And it's still very fresh on Paul Atreides' mind. He's out there in the desert all like Top Gun Maverick being like, talk to me, Jamis.
Talk to me, Jamis. You mean about the dude who died because of him and from whom he seeks wisdom about what to do next?
He died honorably. And Paul Atreides fought honorably, and that's the Iraqian way. And also, they only started taking down the Harkonnen harvesters, Outer Worlders, under Paul's advisement. They've been fighting the Harkonnens for 100 years. House Atreides has been fighting them for 1,000 years. He understands their weaknesses, how to get to them, and under his advisement, they were able to actually take them down.
Yeah, until they come with the military might and bomb the home tree, just like Avatar. So, but I disagree. I'm going to maintain that Jamis died 2 years ago because Arrakis is different. Time moves differently, like Interstellar. It took them 2 years to bury him. What's her nuts? The mummy was pregnant for 6 years. Human gestation is 6 years on Arrakis.
You're making things up.
Dude, she became house mother or whatever, and she had the blue boss baby in her belly, and she was pregnant for so long that those face tattoos that made her into Tom Cruise's The Mummy, they were like all faded and janky, and she still hadn't had the baby.
You know, the sun does its damage on Arrakis. You know, tattoos aren't going to withstand that. You love Rebecca Ferguson. What
awesome.
Are you on about?
I'm saying that it was weird. I was like, still? She hasn't had the baby? In the time that
she still hasn't had
right.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
But I was like, wait, when did Paul's eyes turn blue? And Kelly Ray was like, it was a time jump. It's been a while.
No.
And I'm like, she's still pregnant. It's been
you
years.
Guys, what is your problem? They turned blue. Didn't you see it happen? They turned blue when he drank the
vitamin
water
right?
of
so
life. Yes.
The worms create both the vitamin water and the spice?
They just protect the spice or
okay.
guard? They guard it or I don't think they make it.
Yeah, they do. The worms give
dude,
them the spice. And so then I
dude.
Added...
I laughed. So, I don't think I've laughed that hard. It's so long as when I saw that stupid person riding that worm in the AMC lobby. Oh my God, that was so dumb. I mean, I want that costume for Halloween, but you have to post that video. That is the stupidest. He's like, it's like popcorn and like, join AMC Stubs. Like, here's the A-lister line. He's like cruising around on his worm.
Look, dude, if you're going to go that way, then you need like a Beats by Dre pill or something inside the thing, blasting the music, right? The chanting.
Was he not? I guess the music
they just added it to the video, but you need that.
God.
It's half of the effect, I think.
Oh, Mike, that was so funny. What was he riding?
I think it was a boost board, one of those motorized skateboards inside the long, like I think there was a dryer. No, it was like a cat tunnel.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that was movie accurate. You know how I know? Because nothing was moving. There was no apparent mechanism for movement in that thing. Likewise, the worms, we see them as a baby, the providers or the creators or the makers. I think that's what they're called. They do the spice and the vitamin water, but they have no method of movement that's discernible. They have musculature because they wrapped around what's her nuts like an anaconda. But you see snakes. You know why snakes don't slither under the sand? Is because they can't move themselves. They can't adjust their bodies to move. When snakes move through the water, there's a discernible ripple. Like these snakes move in a straight line. The only thing I can factor, given that they don't have cilia or cilia or whatever, like little centipede legs, is that they must take in the sand through their gullet and then poop it out the other end so as to create velocity.
Yeah, so they blast it out.
How do they move? They have like turbo poop. How do they move propulsion? In a straight line? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, we could call on the scientists of Arrakis.
Yeah, we should do that.
Biologists. But really, you're going to pick on the biology and the sand dynamism of our... Come on.
I'm telling you, Arrakis has to be different. Time, aging, biology, chemistry, all these things have to work differently on Arrakis for things to make sense. Do you know why a blue whale in the water is the largest organism on Earth or the largest moving organism, an animal? Because organisms, their musculature is finite in strength. You can't be that size and not collapse under your own weight, let alone propel you at lightning speed through the freaking desert under the sand. It doesn't make sense that creatures can be that big unless it's different on another planet or hatched in the mind of dweebs. And then like, we're going with it. I don't care what you think. The worms can move under the earth.
When they poon the worms,
harpoon,
like Snow Crash style,
harpoon.
When they poon them, do they control them? Like, no. Do they now own them like Avatar style and then can this direct them?
Maybe. The little flaps open. It's like, oh, you got me. Let me give you a ride.
Well, I mean, they were coordinated. They were like a half dozen worms all heading toward the battlefield.
Yep. They took the worms south like a worm subway.
Okay. So you're saying... So you're saying that the rules on Arrakis are different?
They have to be. If you want me on board, they have to be different.
Well, something that's not different on Arrakis is fanaticism.
No, and that's my problem.
Because the fanaticism that the mummy stokes up is terrifying. And though Javier Bardem is like so cute in his fanaticism, it's kind of scary. He was just so adoring in his discipleness.
No, he was the Morpheus character. He believed in the One, even when doubt was cast, and still he maintained. Even though he questioned it at times, he was still dedicated and based his entire world around the fact that he was right. So the tie-in, when Thanos taught Timothée Chalamet how to fight, when he reversed the thing on Elvis, right?
But that was a part one reference.
Yeah, but when Thanos shows up again with a spice harvester and they kind of jump out, they popped out of the sand like daisies. When they pop out, doesn't Wonka kill his dudes before they join forces and hug?
Yes, Paul and the Fremen do kill some of Josh Brolin's dudes, but they were all not mercenaries. What were they? Scavengers?
Rebels? But still, he's like...
I don't think he had a particular allegiance to them other than his duke, his lord.
He's like, buddy. Okay. I mean, that seems kind of unnecessary, but whatever.
They were just opportunists. It's not like that was his family. But you're right. He certainly turned a blind eye to all the carnage around them.
So the fanaticism, we talked about my disdain for movies about messiahs, because the whole thing about being guided by the religion doesn't matter in this case if the religion turns out to be true. It's all about religious fervor, and this movie really plays into that. And there's a lot of, we're supposed to have reverence for the history, for the prophecy, but they also call it out kind of continuously. These people can't exist without faith in the desert.
I mean, people are speculating, but I think it's because 3 is all about the Holy War and they have to set that up.
Yeah, it better be, because we talked this entire movie and I was like, got to go south. Well, I'm going to fight for you in the north. And the war is coming. And the war is imminent. Okay, now it's finally time to start the war. And the movie ends. And we have to wait 3 more years for the holy war that your brother is starting.
3 more years until Anya Taylor-Joy.
Which I'm not sure was entirely clear.
Well, she loves him for some reason. And she definitely reaches adulthood. 3 years, that's my only complaint, is the wait.
Yeah, Kelly and I talked about this. Back to the Future wasn't guaranteed to have a sequel. When it did, they filmed 2 and 3 back to back and then, you know, took the time to release it. Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings wasn't a sure thing. Still, New Line was like, here you go. Here's hundreds of millions of dollars. Shoot all 3 movies in the blind. I'm not even sure they did the Hobbit that way. Dune, Denis Villeneuve, who has maybe one of the most impressive filmographies for a filmmaker of the visionary type, that he's like, I want to make Dune. And they're like, okay, but one. you get one. And then they greenlit two. He was working in storyboarding and stuff. The same for three. He has a trilogy planned out. They still, as of this recording, haven't greenlit part three. What is up with that? Because committing wholly to build up.
Holy.
We're on the cusp of war. Nope, not going to give it to us. What if they don't do this? What if they don't do, is it an inevitability? And if it is, why didn't they just give him the money and greenlight it and let him do it so he could make it as cohesive as possible?
Well, you know, it's uncertain times, but you would think the $100 million opening weekend would indicate they'd greenlight part three.
Yeah, it made its budget, more than that. Made its budget back, but it's got to keep rolling in order to turn a profit, which it undoubtedly will, because this is regarded by some people as the greatest movie ever made. How can a sequel be such a thing? Top Gun Maverick notwithstanding.
I mean, it's no Battle of the Bastards, but it's pretty awesome. Why do I sense disdain in your tone?
Because Dune is not my jam, man. Dune is not my tune. You want to control people? Tell them a messiah will come. Then they'll wait for centuries. That's true. It's true. The fact that a messiah does actually come to me is irrelevant. It was still religious nut jobs hunkering in the sand.
It's just the principle of it?
Yes.
That bothers you?
Yes.
I do think that Rebecca Ferguson's Bene Gesserit is like turning. She's definitely bad, right?
I don't know. Are the Bene Gesserit bad? Because I was like, why would they dispatch a killer like Elvis to Arrakis when they sent Timothée Chalamet in the first place? And of course, she admitted that, yeah, we sent him there because Atreides cannot stand, because that house cannot challenge the order or whatever, how it's been for thousands of years. I'm not 100% sure that good and bad exist in things like Holy Wars and in the desert. We're not going to get into current political and religious conflicts in the world around us. But is there a right and is there a wrong? Who's to say?
But she's definitely Jabba the Harkonnen's daughter.
Yes. She seemed perfectly normal and rational and then went wholehearted the mummy. She's like, I'm going to be the mama. And they're like, yeah, you're the house mom now. And she's like, okay, all the tattoos, 6-year baby or whatever. She literally drank the Kool-Aid of the cult.
Did you see Zendaya's red carpet ensemble?
I did. Yeah, where she looks like C-3PO.
And Anya Taylor-Joy's like, yeah, I'm in this movie.
Yeah. But I mean, so many stars around. And young stars at that, new Hollywood, so to speak, that when Lea Seydoux shows up and I'm like, she's in this movie? Because there are so many people on the red carpet.
This is new Hollywood. Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, and Josh Brolin, they're like old guard.
Yep.
Christopher Walken looks ancient.
Quite literally. They brought him in. They put him in a robe. He's like, what do you want me to say? And they were like, here you go. That was terrible. Sorry. And they're like, he's not going to hit me, is he? And they're like, no, Chris, just stand there and we'll act around you. It looked a little bit hapless. But dude, aside from the religion and all that stuff being like a little bit tiresome, it's a little bit like Jim Morrison saying drugs expand your mind, bro, and it just unlocks the secrets of the universe. You only think it does. And when you hallucinate, when you're on acid or whatever, you're sitting there and your eyes are spinning or whatever, and you're like, whoa. And to everyone else, you look like an idiot because you're going on a journey inside your own mind. It does not matter what you see and what you feel. It does not affect the rest of us. What you feel only matters to you. And in this world, aren't they all kinda just druggies? They're like, Arrakis is so beautiful. You can see spice in the air. And it's like a drug dude looking out over his pot farm and being like, it's gorgeous, man. You know what I mean? Like, they're all on drugs. Is it bad that I judged them a little bit when they got all blue-eyed? That's the same as like being all red-eyed and dope fiendy.
That's like when your pupils dilate because you're on E.
Right? Or where you're all stoned and you need Visine or whatever because you have like pothead eyes. I was like, don't do it. Don't get the blue eyes.
It's the spice, dude. You just long exposure to spice.
Spice and then, of life. But
are they unhinged?
No, but because in this world, the prophecy is true. And spice does give you legitimate premonitions of the... Well, actually, it is Doctor Strange-style visions of possible futures where Johnny can stab you. Or Johnny could love you, and Anya Taylor-Joy is your baby, and all these things could happen, and maybe people are dying and screaming into the sand. We don't know because we're going to get there, but that's why we can't go south with you after fighting the north.
Is Dune Part 2 just like another GXK for you?
GXK? Godzilla versus... That's terrible. No. By the way, did you see the trailer where they're now teaming up and Kong has a robot arm? What the F? I'm afraid this is what Dune is going to devolve into. They're going to align. Well, they already aligned with the sandworms. They're already riding the sandworms.
So you simply equate this with nonsense? Is that what Dune Part 2 is to you?
No, because of the visionary filmmakers, they elevated. It can't be denied. Denis Villeneuve has the creative vision, and it looks awesome. And ultimately, like you said, you know, Harkonnen bad. Atreides good, but also Atreides kind of bad because Atreides is Harkonnen, and then they fight with knives. And you're like, cool. And so I get that out of Dune. I get cool knife fights and stuff and worm riding.
See, something for everyone in Dune Part 2, because I got plenty of Timothée Chalamet looking through those eyelashes like I like.
But, and you need this level of style. For style to triumph over substance in this movie, it has to be awfully stylistic. You know how I know how powerful Denis Villeneuve's vision is for Dune?
Tell me.
Dune 2 made Timothée Chalamet look tough.
Well, you know, I think the extra 2 or 3 inches that he gets from his tack suit really help. Because he looks buff in that thing.
Yeah, there's a reason he's fully suited and booted and Elvis is not.
Well, it's not like Austin Butler's. He might be yoked, but he's not brawny.
I don't know. What's the difference?
Well, you know, like barrel-chested and like big, like have girth. I don't know.
No, he's the T-1000. He's efficient and streamlined and fast.
Timothée Chalamet looked tough. He was hot. He was dreamy. The hair, it was really funny. Like whenever he was Paul Atreides, the hair would be like in his face. But whenever he was Muad'Dib, it was always like crown-like and tamed and pushed back. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did at times. Well, it's because he's fighting and he needs to look at you through the lashes and through the bangs, all intense-like.
This is Timothée Chalamet fully arriving as a full-fledged movie star.
Action star, even. Even the Duke of Dune would have been cooler.
The Duke of Dune? Maybe that's part 3.
Yeah.
Rise of the Dweebs?
I don't know, man. Right? And you're all excited or whatever? I mean, it's got all the stuff. Like, Blade has the cool sword battle. This one comes down to an old-fashioned pig-sticking match with Elvis. And that's kind of it. And everything else is dressing, and it feels epic and huge in scope, but really you got to give the moviegoers the stuff that looks cool, right? And it can't be like a thin red line think piece amidst great battles and stuff.
I loved my Dune weekend. I'm happy to have something to nerd out about because it's been a while and I don't do the comic book movies. I think that this is really well executed, really well cast. I mean, an impressive cast, ushering in the new Hollywood. I liked Dune. I'm going to give it a totally.
You can't give it a totally. That's my rating system.
You can give it a good.
But I also can't give Dune a boring. But I also won't give Dune a less than. It had ties or whatever, and I didn't trash Dune 1. It was just so dense, and not even a comic book movie, but like a legitimate literature, I guess, movie, but sci-fi for sure. It was a lot, and the names are dumb, and there's only so much I can take out of religious raving nomads, and I get all the Star Wars good and bad and rebel scum and the Imperium and all this stuff. I get all of it. And so it had the stuff that I needed. It had the equivalent of a lightsaber battle and the rest was fine. And you have your nerdy prophesizing in burlap tents and stuff. And I'm not going to deny you that. I'll give Dune a solid all right.
I mean, if anything, it makes me feel a little bit old.
Yeah, it does.
All these kids feel really young.
Right.
But it does make me excited. And I like that. I really enjoyed Dune Part 2. You know what would make Dune Part 3 perfect? Can we start a campaign?
What's that?
For Pedro Pascal to join the cast of Dune Part 3.
Oh, it's inevitable.
Oh, it would be so good.
It's because he looks sand withered and like sand would be all in his beard and stuff.
Definitely. And that's our discussion on Dune Part 2, available in theaters and coming to a streamer, no doubt, near you. Check out our discussion on Dune Part 1, available along with 300 others at orwhatevermovies.com or wherever you get podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Cast.
Hi, I'm Lessa Godet, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Electric Acid.